Hey guys, welcome back to our podcast. This is Erica.
And I'm Josh.
And I love my coffee.
With a splash of crime.
Hi.
Hi. Round two.
Second try.
We recorded one time. We got through introductions.
Just introductions.
Like just hi. And then Smokey decided that he was going to yeet on my computer, press some crazy ass buttons.
He's back for a vengeance. What the fuck? I don't know why now my cat wants to sit on top of the recording station every single time we record now. It's his podcast. We're going to add him into the hosts.
Yes, it's
because
Smokey, Josh, and Erica.
He's literally up here. Also, I didn't name my cat Smokey.
Yes, she did.
He was pre-named.
No, he wasn't.
Because I don't like that he's gray and his name's Smokey. It's so basic.
Really?
But I didn't name him.
We're talking about basic? What are you drinking, Erica?
So today I made my coffee at home.
It's not a vanilla iced latte?
No, it's
I'm just kidding.
It's literally an horchata latte.
I'm just calling you basic.
Gosh. Now he's laying on the
what
other
the
thing.
What the fuck, cat?
So I made an horchata latte today. I bought a half gallon of horchata from Northgate for my son because he loves it. And on its own, it's not the best. But in a coffee, because it's like really creamy. And then I added more cinnamon. It's actually really good. It came out really good.
Yeah, I feel like the store-bought ones just aren't the same. You need someone to make it.
The taco place by my house? Oh my gosh.
Which
that
one?
Was my only craving when I was pregnant. Dude, it's so bomb. They have the ceviche tostadas.
Oh, that place.
Ooh, the horchatas. I think it's made in-house and it's so bomb.
Honestly, I've been craving a good.
Yeah.
Horchata.
Should just pop in for a little drinkity drink.
Be like, hey, go hi.
And maybe some ceviche.
Okay.
Also.
At 9 a.m.?
Fuck it. What's in your cup?
Today, I'm drinking a venti iced shaken espresso from Starbucks. And I added some caramel syrup and I did oat milk.
Bam.
Bam.com.
You're so lame. Anyway, what have you been up to?
I've been working a lot. But I got my nose pierced.
Oh my God. She a hoe.
She a hoe.
You know what they say about nose piercings?
What do they say about nose piercings?
I don't know.
Okay.
She's a hoe.
She's a hoe. Yeah, it didn't hurt as bad as I thought it was going to hurt. I did cry, but it was a reflex.
I'm surprised because honestly, when you get hit in the nose, it hurts so bad.
Honestly, the recovery is worse than the actual piercing itself.
I feel like that's the case with every piercing.
Yes.
Because it swells and it gets sore.
I was at work last night. Oh, bitch. And I forgot I had a nose piercing. And I put my whole hand in.
Yeah.
I'd like to itch my nose. And I immediately just started crying again.
Yeah,
and
like it made your eyes water.
Are you okay?
You're like, no.
I'm like, I'm dead. This is it. This is how I go.
That's so funny. It's really funny.
Yeah, it was wild. I was like, or no.
Yeah, I've just been living my best life. Cleaning, cooking. Hunter is having spirit week, so we're doing all kinds of different things for school. And then I've been reading a lot. I just finished a book.
That's cool.
Yeah. I want to jump into the story because it's a long one. And I think you'll be super interested because it takes place where our grandma used to live growing up. Like Skinner and Temecula is where our grandma managed the campground there for years and years and years. Not when the story takes place. This is like way after. But I would spend my summers here. When I saw it, it's just like such a random location. I was like, damn, that's crazy. Yeah, exactly.
So
my grandparents just really set roots here. My grandfather was the Santa Claus for Old Town Temecula. And my grandparents owned the beef jerky shop in Old Town Temecula. And so we spent a lot of time there. And then they lived at the campground at Lake Skinner. Now they don't live there anymore, but I would spend a lot of time here, so I was like, oh, shit, that's crazy. I don't know why it just, like, hits closer to home when you've been there.
No, 100%. You have a connection to it. And I feel like visualizing, like, when you visualize things, you're able to visualize it better because...
For sure. This lake actually has no swimming in it. Swimming's not allowed, but you could rent, like, I forgot what they're called, but those flat boats that you can fish off of.
Like a fisherman's boat?
No, I forgot what it's called. But basically, one summer, a little boy fell off of it, and he was close to my age at the time. And he got caught in all the like seaweed and everything that's in a lake at the bottom. And it dragged him down. And then he was missing for 2 days. And then when they finally found him, he was like half eaten by fish and stuff like that. So
the piranhas caught him.
It literally traumatized me because I was staying there at the time.
Yeah. And he was around your age?
Yeah. I think I was like 10 and he was like 8 or something, or 10 or 9.
Stuff always hits closer to home when they're around your age because you're like, that can happen to me.
It was crazy because they had posted for the search and everything, and it was just insane.
Did you search?
I was too young.
Why not? You're never too young to be an investigator, Erica.
The parents, the older people try to keep the kids away from it because we'd just be in the way, I think.
Or they'd go missing. You'd have multiple victims. That would be horrible.
You never know. So they really highly suggest you have a life jacket in there. That's our word of wisdom for today. Always wear your life jacket. I'm a true fisherman, so I already know. I'm an OG.
I don't like fishing.
I know. So lame. I love it.
Which I also tried when I was like, how old was I? 12?
Yeah. We need to try again. I told my sister, because she's not working right now, and I'm a stay-at-home mom, that we should just go fishing every day with Hunter. We'll just become like hardcore fishermen, like retired old men.
Perfect.
And we'll just be there fishing every single day.
Oh my God, let's do it. We'll start fishing and then we'll just have fish every night.
Yeah, I then we'll get, love fish. What, I don't know.
Fish tacos, fish sticks, fish.
Filet of fish.
Burritos, fish,
gefilte ceviche. Fish. Okay, so anyway, I'm going to jump into the story. This story includes betrayal, jealousy, and a search for justice. This is the story of Brittany Kilgore. This takes place in April 2012, and wait, 2012, I was 22, and at this time, Brittany Kilgore was also 22.
You guys are the same age?
Yeah, so I guess we're the same age. Damn, that's crazy, girl. I didn't even realize that.
So it was you?
It was basically. She would be the same age as me today.
That's what, like late 40s?
Oh, very funny. Okay. 22-year-old Brittany Kilgore resided in Fallbrook, California, which is situated in the San Diego area. At the time, she was married to Corey Kilgore, a U.S. Marine stationed at Camp Pendleton. They chose Fallbrook due to its proximity to the base, facilitating Corey's military obligations. She had been married to her husband for 2 years. She made the decision to file for divorce from her husband, Corey Kilgore, who was deployed to Afghanistan at the time. Their marriage had begun when Brittany was just 20, I think, 22. Like, she was pretty young. And her husband's deployment left her feeling incredibly isolated and lonely. Brittany just really longed to be closer to her friends and family who were located in another state. She was feeling disconnected and wanted to return to her support network. So she made plans to pack up and move back home.
Which was?
I read two different things, but for sure it was in another state.
Okay.
So I'm not going to say where because it doesn't really matter, okay. I don't think. She just was going to be packing up, moving home to another state.
Okay.
I read that she grew up in California, but I'm not sure. So maybe her family ended up moving out of state and she stayed. And then I'm not really sure. But now I'm going to talk a little bit about three other people and then we'll circle back.
Okay.
The three people I'm going to talk about is a man named Luis Perez. He's 45 and he served as a staff sergeant in the Marine Corps. Dorothy Maraglino.
Maybe she's Italian.
Maraglino.
So that name.
Yeah. She's 40 at this time, and she also went by D, or Mistress D.
Ooh, she was a mistress.
She was a mistress.
I don't know why, but when you said that, I thought, like, dominatrix.
Yeah, that's, oh. Yeah.
Okay, so I was right.
Yes.
The intrusive thoughts won.
Okay.
The intrusive thoughts were right.
And Jessica Lopez, 25. So she's way younger than the other two. And they're active participants in the BDSM lifestyle.
Wait, I wasn't ready.
I know you weren't. Okay, so BDSM stands for bondage, discipline, and sadomasochism. In this lifestyle, consenting individuals assume roles as master, sex slave, or mistress, and may engage in giving and receiving pain during play sessions using implements. Whips and chains, handcuffs.
Smack a little booty up with my belt. Sorry.
So, Lewis, Dorothy, or D, I'm going to probably most likely be calling her D in this because it's easier to remember, and Jessica embrace this lifestyle with Lewis as the master. Dorothy is his main chick, his main partner, his main bitch. Okay. And so Mistress D is his submissive.
Okay.
And then Jessica, she's newer to the group. She's Dorothy's sex slave.
So this is like a sex group.
Yeah, it's a
triangle.
It's a throuple.
Throuple.
Dorothy or Miss D, Mistress D, she's a switch. So she's a submissive role for Lewis and a dominant role with Jessica. They live together in Fallbrook with Lewis practically living there, but primarily staying on the base.
What the fuck?
They actually kept a house manual that was written by D outlining their rules and boundaries, along with a perfect slave checklist and a slave contract stating clear consent and agreement on what each person was comfortable with and what they were not.
I'm like so mind boggled.
It's so much work. It's so much work. So Dorothy enforced her dominance by having Jessica wear a dog collar consistently that said property of Mistress D on it, or Miss D on it. Lewis, since he's the master, he has authority over Dorothy and extended to controlling Jessica as well. He's in control of all individuals in this household, right? Lewis, he has a thing for causing pain and being dominant. He's a dominant daddy. Even in the past relationships where he choked his partners during sex, he had these wild fantasies about abducting someone for sex and... During sexual activity, he would take things too far and wouldn't listen if they said their safe word, which is a big no.
He freaky girl.
Yes, yes. So the number one rule, obviously, in that community is that consent should always come first.
Yes.
Safe words, very important thing.
Like a no, like a stop.
But he doesn't give a fuck. Okay. All three individuals in the household shared fantasies involving BDSM, abduction, torture, murder, even lactation fantasies, like milking fantasies. Like Miss D was like,
"You gonna milk me?
You gonna milk me?" Which is fine. That's all great. We don't kink shame here. We've said it before. We'll say it again.
I just wasn't ready for us to go this hard into kinks right now.
It's too early.
It's 10:24 in the morning.
Okay. In Lewis's diary, there was a coded passage describing the abduction, torture, and killing of someone disliked, along with the disposing of the body and using bleach to cover up evidence.
Wait, a bleach doesn't cover up evidence. So that's a stupid.
Yeah.
So the sporians. Get good, bro.
D wrote about kidnapping three generations of women and subjected them to sexual torture and coerced suicide. Another document found in Lewis's garage. Wait, we still call it suicide? Isn't it unaliving now?
I don't know.
Okay, let us know if we're bothering you.
We're going to stick with suicide.
Okay,
because if you say unalive, I feel like I'm watching a TikTok video.
Yeah, I just don't know what we're allowed to say. Okay, another document found in Lewis's garage and attributed to D detailed cutting of the throat of a woman while she was having sex with... I don't know why I keep wanting to call him Louis. D also crafted a handwritten list of places to find vulnerable victims, including instructions on disposing of bodies and avoiding detection. Obviously, Lewis and D, they're a couple with an open relationship. But even though D, she played along with it, she's really insecure. She's always worried that Lewis would leave her for someone else and was like jealous, crazy, psycho.
It sounds like he just took shit too far. That's all I can think of. Do you want to know what the two thoughts in my head are?
Huh.
He takes things too far and he has a small dick.
Probably.
I'm sorry. I don't know what else to say. If you're overcompensating, you have to overcompensate for something. And I'm not trying to say that everybody who has BDSM kinks has a small dick. But I don't know.
This guy in particular?
Yes. I think it's because he's in the military and he does this.
I'm pretty sure he's black.
Oh.
I'm like pretty sure.
I didn't realize we were talking about Drake.
Yeah, so you never know.
My apologies. I'm sorry, Mr. Drake. I'm sorry, Mr. What's the song that he sings?
Drake?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm sorry, Mr. Drake.
Okay.
Just my apologies. It won't happen again.
Brittany, we're circling back to Brittany now. Brittany, I'm going to tell you how Brittany knows these three individuals.
Yeah.
So Brittany has a close friend named Elizabeth Hernandez. And Brittany and Elizabeth, they live in the same apartment complex. Elizabeth is friends with Dee since they became friends in 2011.
Okay.
And so since they're buddies, obviously she's always, hey, come over. But since Elizabeth is friends with Brittany, sometimes she would bring Brittany with her.
Okay.
Oh, we're going to go hang out at my friend's house. Whatever.
Drink wine.
Yeah, something. Brittany and Elizabeth, they did not participate in the BDSM lifestyle. They were aware of what was going on in Dee's household.
Okay.
So they're just friends.
Yeah.
But they're not in the throuple. They're not.
Which is fine.
Doing kinky shit.
Yeah.
Okay, so at first, Dee, she didn't have any issues with Brittany Kilgore. They're pretty cool with each other, but Dorothy starts feeling like Brittany was getting too flirty with her main man, Lewis.
Okay.
And Dorothy got all worked up and jealous. And Dorothy, she ugly.
Fuck.
I'm sorry, she's ugly. And Brittany is beautiful.
Okay.
So I think it wasn't even that Brittany was flirting with her man. I think she just was jealous because she was really pretty.
Yeah.
And Dorothy gets all worked up and jealous. So behind Brittany's back, she starts talking to her friend Elizabeth and is basically calling her names like the disease or the herpes behind her back, like just out of frustration. Oh, are you going to bring the disease over? Oh, the herpes, blah, blah, blah.
That's fucked up.
But I'm like, dude, why would Elizabeth still be bringing Brittany over if she knows that Dee doesn't like her?
Yeah.
It's that weird. I'm like, but it is Riverside County. What do you expect?
Yeah, that's true. That's
the 909. I'm just kidding. We love Riverside. We're just joking. 909. Do we? I don't know. I don't know. There's nothing wrong with the 909.
Us Orange County bitches.
But if you know. I'm just kidding.
The girls who get it and the girls who don't.
It's just very different from Orange County. That's fine. Okay.
Everybody calls us the rich bitches.
Yeah.
Why?
Are we wrong? Are they wrong? No, just kidding.
Except we don't have Air One.
I'm just kidding. Okay, Dorothy, Dee, Miss Dee, Mistress Dee, she starts getting close to Elizabeth, which is, she's friends with Brittany. And it seems like she's trying to pull her into their BDSM scene because Elizabeth seemed easy to influence. Dee enjoyed having Elizabeth over because they gossiped together, especially about how much Dee disliked Brittany. Dee even went as far as offering to take care of Brittany if Elizabeth wanted her gone. But Elizabeth didn't seem too keen on getting involved in that drama. She just listened to Dee rants and decide keep Brittany away instead. So she's not bringing her over anymore. Maybe yeah, sometimes, I don't know.
Why the fuck would she bring her over if they both clearly, I feel like if they're talking shit on someone, you both clearly don't like them.
I feel like they're just bored or something. I don't fucking know.
They're just fucking, they sound like just a bunch of fucking annoying ass housewives.
Yeah, exactly. The real BDSM wives of Riverside County. Elizabeth says, dude, Dee, just chill. Like, you don't have to worry because Brittany's moving. She's getting a divorce and she's moving. And Dorothy's, like, sick. I fucking hate it. Like, I hate her. Whatever. On the afternoon of April 13th, 2012, Elizabeth visits their place. Dee and Jessica and Lewis's place. Because technically it's, like, Lewis's place.
Okay.
And she mentions this dinner cruise in San Diego called the Hornblower Dinner Cruise that she had recently been on. She's, dude, this shit was so fun. Loved it.
Like, let's fucking go.
10 out of 10. Girl, like, you got to try this dinner cruise. And now I'm like, okay, let's fucking go.
Did you research it?
Not yet, but I think we should go. Because I have seen these, like, fishing. When you see them and they're, like, all having dinner, I'm like, damn, what is that? I'm trying to go.
Me too.
So
probably expensive.
It's fine. It's fine. Elizabeth's just chatting away. She's telling her all about this dinner cruise, saying, oh my God, it was a blast. 10 out of 10. Then she casually mentions that she was thinking of taking Brittany on the cruise since she had also told Brittany about it. And Brittany was like, oh my God, I would love to go before I move. And so she's like, dude, I think I'm going to take Brittany. Like, she would love it.
Yeah.
And she like won't miss out on this really cool thing before she moves. Nothing seems off about the conversation, but that innocent suggestion planted a seed in Dorothy's mind.
Dorothy's pissed.
Dee's like, I have this plan before she leaves, right? So on April 13th, 2012, Brittany's at home packing with a friend named Shani.
Shani?
Channy.
Channy. Okay.
And they're packing, they're hanging out, shooting the shit. Channy also lives in the same apartment as Brittany and Elizabeth. So she's there. It's 4:30 p.m. and they're packing. And all of a sudden, someone knocks on the door. Right? Knock, knock. Hello, it's me, Lewis. And he's like standing there and she's like, what the fuck? How does he know where I live? And like, Brittany's like, oh, how do you know where I live? And he's just like, oh, mutual friends. I just asked around, like, whatever.
That's weird.
So he's like, dude, I'm going on the Hornblower dinner cruise tonight. Have you heard of it? And Brittany's like, oh my God, yes.
Wait, where the fuck is Lewis even going?
Like, my friend just told me about the horn blower and it sounds super fun. And he's like, I have an extra ticket, but I have no one to take.
You just have two bitches?
Basically, I think he was like, I was going to go with my main girl, Dorothy, but she's pregnant. Because she was like fully pregnant at this time.
Oh, fuck.
He's like, now she can't go. Do you want to go? And Brittany's like, you know, I'm packing. But so really, she's just uncomfortable with the idea of hanging out alone with him because he's with somebody.
And Dorothy hates her.
So she's unpacking.
Yeah, like, no, thanks, but no.
Yeah, so he leaves his number. He's like, reconsider. It'll be so much fun. Dorothy would not care. Like, Dee doesn't mind. So he leaves at 4:54. He leaves the complex. There's like security footage showing that he left. And as he exits, he texts Dorothy saying that guy wasn't successful. And Dee responds, tomorrow is another day. So they got plans.
Oh.
5 minutes after he leaves, Brittany actually texts him. And she's like, hey, do you know anyone that can help me move heavy furniture? Because she's like, I have this number. He's obviously in the Marines.
He probably has a bunch of strong ass friends.
I'll buy pizza and beer if they just come help me.
Yeah, just my fridge moved.
Right. And so he's like, I would totally help you, but you have to come tonight. And I'll have five guys there tomorrow to help you move in the morning.
What the fuck?
Five guys? She's like, oh my God, I love five guys. I love five guys.
Like, I love their burgers.
Bring some peanuts.
Do they have peanuts?
Yeah. Like that. When you go in to wait for your food, there's like peanuts for you to eat.
I didn't know that. I've never gone there. I've always dashed in.
Oh, that makes sense. Next time, tell your DoorDasher, bring some peanuts. Don't be shy.
Yeah, what the fuck? He's been holding out.
I know.
Pissed.
She's like,
fine, I'll go.
I really need the help, but I don't want to go to this party. I don't want to cause attention with Dorothy. Whatever. So he's assuring her that Dorothy's okay with it. He's like, you know what? Call her. She's okay with it. Call her. So he gives Brittany D's number and convinces her to reach out. Brittany eventually calls Dorothy around 6 p.m. And although the details of their conversation are unknown, her friend is there, Channy. So she overhears them and they're like giggling, laughing. So they're on the phone, but it's positive vibes. Whatever.
I wonder if it was that or if it was like uncomfortable. So your man like basically came to my door and wants me to go on a dinner cruise with him. It's like super weird and I think it's fucked up.
But I want to go.
I want to go, but
he said he's also your man. But also, yeah.
He said to call you. I'm sorry. That's how I would be. I'd be so uncomfortable. I'd be like, I'm calling you. I don't really know what I'm supposed to say here.
But free's free. So
yeah, I'm trying like dinner's to go. Dinner, honey.
Yeah. So she gets off the phone and she tells her friend Channy, oh, Dorothy can't go on the cruise because she's pregnant and she doesn't want to risk getting seasick and ruining the night. Like wasting this ticket.
Which
and,
makes
like,
sense.
Stuck on a boat sick. So Dee's like, you know what? I really don't care. Just go. Like, it's no big deal. She tells her friend, she's like, I'm not into Lewis that way. But this is my last opportunity to experience the dinner cruise before moving. And I really want to go because it sounds like a lot of fun. Like, my friend Elizabeth hyped it up. It's hyped. So at 6:10, Brittany texts Lewis saying, you know what? I'm down. I'm down for the dinner cruise.
Fuck it. Let's go.
YOLO.
YOLO. I have FOMO. I'm leaving anyway.
I'm leaving anyway. It's fine. So he's pumped. He's, yeah, girl, get ready by 7:30. I'll pick you up.
6:10 to 7:30. That's only an hour. No, that's not enough time.
I know. So she ends up borrowing dresses from Channy because she's like, I don't have anything. Everything's packed. Oh, fuck. What the heck am I going to wear, Channy's? I got you. Two choices. You got two options.
I got two options.
So she like ends up picking out this dress. She gets ready. He's like, I promise my friends will help you move in the morning. Don't even worry. But the weird thing is he's picking her up at 7:30, but the hornblower cruise leaves at 7:00.
What the fuck?
So obviously he never had plans to take her on it at all. So before she heads out, Brittany gives her friend Channy Lewis and Dorothy's number. She's like, I'm a bit iffy about this whole thing. Here's their numbers, like, just in case. Lewis asked Brittany to meet at the front gate because they're delayed for the dinner cruise, but she requested that he drive into the complex because it's raining. He's like, hey, meet me at the curb outside the gate. And she's like, no, absolutely not. My fucking hair. It's raining.
No.
So he ends up driving in, and surveillance footage reveals him arriving at Brittany's apartment complex at 7:36, and they both leave at 7:40, confirming they did depart together. Around 7:50, just 10 minutes after leaving, Brittany's friend Channy receives a text from Brittany simply saying help. She was concerned, so she tries calling Brittany around 8:00, but receives no answer. So at 8:05, Brittany's friend receives a text from Brittany saying, yes, I love this party. Wait, it's just weird because that's literally like 30 minutes later. I don't know. It's weird. 30 minutes in, the party's just starting. If you did get on the cruise, you'd be like sitting down, getting comfortable. You're not even drunk yet because you still like.
So someone sent the text from her phone to cover it up.
Basically, that's what it's looking like. So instantly, she gets a strange feeling that something's not right. And the message doesn't sound like Brittany's. Usually Brittany, she would say, yeah, I love this party. She never texts yes. Ever. Yeah, and okay. She's like, this is not her. She ends up receiving more texts from Brittany that just seem off. Like she's talking about hot guys, just like weird stuff. And she's trying to call Brittany over and over, but she doesn't get a response. And so she's super worried. So instead of continuing to text Brittany, she's like, dude, you need to call me. I want to hear your voice.
Good. Fucking good ass friend.
So she gets another text from Brittany saying, okay, music is too loud. During the trial, later on, Lewis admits to using Brittany's phone to call her friend while playing loud music from his car to create the impression that Brittany was at a noisy party and couldn't talk. Meanwhile, Brittany's friend Elizabeth, who introduced her to the group, heard about the situation and immediately called Dorothy to find out what was going on. So I think Channy called Elizabeth because they all lived or went over because they all lived in the same complex. And so she's calling Dee and Dee's like, I haven't spoken to Brittany. I don't know. I don't know what's happening. So concerned, Elizabeth calls Lewis's phone and asks him about Brittany's whereabouts, expressing worry. Lewis told her that he had taken Brittany downtown to a club where she started talking to some guy and then left her there. However, the cell phone records revealed that Lewis was actually at Dee's house during this time, indicating he left Brittany's place and went straight back to Dee's house. So after he picked her up, they went straight back to Dee's house. And Dee informs Lewis that cell phones are traceable through cell towers, implying that the story wouldn't hold up, but he's obviously really stupid. Lewis thought he could make his story believable by taking Brittany's phone downtown to dump it, matching his lie. But the phone data showed that he went from Brittany's to Dee's.
Because he's sending text messages.
To downtown and then back. He hits downtown. He ditches the phone. And then, but he has his phone so they could trace his phone.
He's like fucking stupid.
And it basically catches his phone and Jessica's phone heading east toward Temecula in the early hours of April 14th. After that.
Sick.
Their phones end up being traced to Lake Skinner, where they spent a significant amount of time before heading back to Dorothy's house. Which, like, they still have their phones on them this whole time. They take their phones, and then on April 14th, Elizabeth, Brittany's friend, calls up Dee asking about Brittany. And Dee gets all flustered and starts stumbling over her words, trying to come up with an explanation. Then she hands a phone to Lewis, who proceeds to give Elizabeth three different versions of what happened the previous night. So this is, like, the next day. Her friend's still, like, my friend never came home.
Are these people really stupid?
I think so.
It's just like all bad.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. It's just a big mess. And nobody seems to have a straight answer about Brittany's whereabouts. The police finally get involved and they reach out to Lewis, who agrees to come down to the station to chat. But when he gets there, his story keeps changing and he can't give a clear answer about where Brittany is. But what really caught the police's attention was that his car was covered in fresh mud, even though it was raining the night before. It would have been washed off.
Yeah.
So after the rain, or like during the rain, he was driving, which is super suspicious, especially with the missing girl involved. When they asked him about it, he couldn't give a reasonable explanation. He agreed to let them search the car and they found an illegal weapon inside. People think it was a stun baton.
Oh.
Like a... So
he ends up
getting... I think so. So he ends up getting arrested.
For that?
Yeah.
Well, they probably just wanted to arrest him on something to hold him. Yeah,
right.
You're right.
So the police go to Dorothy's house. Nobody's home. They see that items are missing in the house and seems usually clean and fresh, like it's been recently cleaned.
Like they use fucking bleach.
It was strange that they hadn't returned home that evening, so the police decided they needed to track them down. They managed to locate Dorothy's vehicle at a hotel parking lot near the San Diego airport on April 17th.
They're so stupid.
It just seems like they're trying to make a getaway. So the police head over to the hotel where Dorothy's vehicle was located. They find the room number since these geniuses had registered under their own names for the night.
Oh, just don't mind me. I'm just actually just put us in room 202.
Here's
my credit card. Just put the people that killed that bitch.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the cops are going to be like, hey, we're actually here because somebody died. Because Dorothy hates her, remember? So that's why she called her that bitch. No respect to all respect to Brittany. And then when the cops come, they'll be like, hey, there's somebody who killed someone. Oh, yeah. Room 202.
Yeah, like, basically, yeah.
Thought out plan.
So they knock on the door, and Jessica answers. She's like, hello. She opens it just a crack. The chain lock is on. They can't fully open it. She's peeking out. She's like, hi. No, I'm like super calm right now. But the police notice she's breathing super slow and suspect something's off. So despite her attempts to assure them everything's fine, she's like, no, I'm fine. That's just how I talk. They're like, they see blood on the floor behind her and they're like, is that blood? And she's like, what, that? No, I just had my period. No, just had my period.
Damn.
No, I don't know what she says. I don't know what she
Sorry.
Says.
It's just a really heavy flow.
It's just a heavy flow. They kick the door in and they find Jessica inside the room half naked and bleeding from her neck. It turns out she attempted suicide in the room. Alongside her, the police discover a handwritten confession letter with a sign that says, pigs read this. Awkward.
Awkward.
Sorry, I didn't think I was going to be here when you saw that. Just, so in the letter, Jessica takes on full responsibility for Brittany's death, detailing how she alone attacked Brittany, restraining her, used a taser on her, attempted to dismember her with her power tools, and disposed of her body near Lake Skinner. Which is like a chilling and horrific confession because it's like, dude, what? So she did all this by herself, she says.
Oh, okay.
Even though Lewis is the one that picked her up. And yeah, everybody, yeah. Like Channy, seen Lewis pick her up, which is okay. Okay, Jessica. Whatever you say.
I'm sorry. I didn't take my antidepressant that day, so I just felt really emotional.
It's just like weird. It's just weird. So the letter Jessica wrote was not only confessed to Brittany's death, but also showed her affection for Dorothy and her submissive role. Oh, but I love Dorothy, blah, 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 whatever. So it seems like basically Dorothy and Lewis were pinning everything on Jessica because she was the slave. Like, you need to take accountability for this. The police find the details of the killing believable, but they doubted Jessica acted alone, especially since the letter mentioned Brittany being at Dorothy's house the night before. So it's like, obviously, others were involved.
High key. Literally, there's video footage of fucking Lewis being a dumb fuck.
Right.
What the fuck?
So Jessica claims Brittany showed up uninvited and demanded sex from Lewis.
Oh my God. She was like, take me, daddy.
She was like, yes. Right here, right now.
Right here. Your kitchen table, clear it.
Which, like, okay, I don't know why people think that chicks are just going to beg for sex from some dude when she could have probably got any guy at the fucking dinner
Guess
party.
Guess what? Porn. That's what ruined it.
They think it's real life.
They're like, so, oh my God, big sausage pizza.
They said it led to a fight. But cell phone records and surveillance footage show a different story. The police maintain the surveillance from Hotel Sur, which reveals Dorothy and Jessica going down to the hotel lobby. They ask the front desk for copies of the confession letter and were seen making 3 copies of this confession letter.
Oh, they made copies.
Like, why do they need copies? I don't know. So they went down to the lobby. They were like, hey, we have this letter. It's just a fake story. Can you make copies?
What the fuck? Do they just don't read it?
Just don't read it. Close your eyes.
No peeking. No,
just make a copy. So police are already suspicious of Dorothy's involvement. Then on the morning of April 17th, they discover that Dorothy had left the state and flown to Virginia to visit her family. So she just leaves.
She leaves, bitch.
And Jessica is attempting suicide by slitting her throat in the freaking hotel. And then the police take Jessica to the hospital and she ends up surviving and she's arrested.
What the fuck?
Search team goes out to Lake Skinner where they quickly discover Brittany's body. The medical examiner determines that she had been strangled to death. Her neck had been fractured, indicating that someone had applied a significant pressure more than 30 pounds to her neck. Additionally, there were bruises on her legs and a bruise on the outside of her left wrist, consistent with being handcuffed. She also had 2 cuts forming a T on her left wrist and 5 small pinprick marks on the left side of her face, consistent with the use of a stun baton.
Fucking stunned her to the face?
Yeah, so I think maybe that's how they, like, subdued her, maybe. Like, put her in the trunk, and then she was like, I have my phone, help. You know what I mean?
What the fuck?
I really don't know.
That's fucked up.
Oh my God. It's just, like, a horrifying and tragic outcome. Because they literally dump her at Lake Skinner, where everybody's walking and boating and fishing and hiking and running and whatever. In addition to the injuries noted earlier, there was also a deep cut on Brittany's left knee consistent with the use of a power saw, believed to have been inflicted post-mortem to try to
cut her up.
Yeah, dismember her. Investigators also observed evidence suggesting she had been doused with bleach. Upon further search of Lewis's car, they find disposable gloves, pieces of plastic, and a working stun baton. Blood was discovered on the plastic gloves, linking Lewis to the crime scene. And Brittany's DNA was found on the items and the car. The treads from Lewis's car were a possible match to the treads found near Brittany's body at Lake Skinner. This is all dirt. On April 19th, Dorothy's house was searched again, where items believed to have been used in the murder were found. Additionally, police discovered BDSM contracts, and that's where they find the contracts and a fully equipped BDSM room, which Dee had been converting into a nursery due to her pregnancy. So it's like half BDSM, half nursery.
What the fuck?
Like, whatever, right? But she was claiming that they hadn't practiced BDSM since she got pregnant. And she's, like, pregnant at this point.
Okay. Weird.
She gets arrested in May 2012. But there was no blood or evidence at her house linking her to the crime. When they searched her truck, they found a rope and knife, but they couldn't connect them to the crime.
Yeah, it was just there.
It was like, fuck, she might slip through the cracks. But then in her truck, they find a receipt for cleaning supplies, water, paper towels, and rubber gloves purchased on April 14th, which seems like a smoking gun. Additionally, a special agent from the Naval Criminal Investigative Service searches Lewis's home on the base. There they find BDSM writings, including some written by Dorothy. And that's where it like talks about their throat slitting fantasy stories and his abduction and murder fantasies.
Cute.
Dorothy's cell phone is found a year and a half later, wiped clean and disassembled in her brother's closet in Missouri. Maybe when she left, she took her phone. The clothes worn by Lewis, Dorothy, and Brittany on April 13th were never recovered. All three were arrested. During the trial, Lewis admitted to tricking Brittany into getting into his car by pretending they were still going on a cruise after they had missed the boat. The day before Kilgore's disappearance, Lewis texted about upcoming plans to engage in BDSM play with someone he did not like, which was a very big red flag. The person that he texted told him not to go through with it, but he said it would give him a chance to control his temper, his feelings, and not hurt somebody he wants to hurt badly. Yeah. October 21st, 2015, the jury finds Lewis and Dorothy guilty of first-degree murder, conspiracy to commit kidnapping, torture, and attempted sexual battery. Jessica was acquitted of the conspiracy charge, but convicted of all other charges.
Good.
On November 19th, 2015, Lewis and Dorothy were sentenced to life with a possibility of parole, while Jessica received the same sentence on January 8th, 2016. They have all appealed their convictions, and Brittany's husband later issued a statement urging people not to believe everything they hear in the news, acknowledging the tragedy, but cautioning against jumping to conclusions about she was like a really good person. She wasn't involved in all this. Brittany, known for her kindness, was wrongly associated with the BDSM aspect of her murder. However, she had no connection to that lifestyle. She tragically became a victim of people driven by envy and jealousy, particularly Dorothy.
Good fuck Dorothy.
Yeah.
She's a bitch.
And that's today's case. That's all I have for you.
She screwed up.
It's just like weird. Just screwed up. Messed up.
I just can't believe.
I feel like it was a really sloppy crime.
Yeah. If you're going to do it, like, do it right.
I think there are more details to this case about, like, their alibi was wrong. They said they, like, rented a movie.
Oh.
During that time, but then it was shown that the movie wasn't even rented that same day.
Oh.
And then there was, like, I think more details into the crime, but I was like,
They were, like, big dumb.
Right.
Like, they just weren't very good at this.
And they're all ugly as hell.
Except Brittany.
Except Brittany.
Brittany was pretty.
That's why I'd be freaking jealous too. Actually, no, I wouldn't because I don't get jealous.
You don't.
But I'm just like, dude.
I was going to be nice and be like, you weren't going to be jealous because you're pretty. But then I don't want it to go to your head.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Still ugly.
Dude. But D, hot mess.
All of them are. Even Jessica.
Jessica, also ugly.
Poor Jessica, for being dumb.
And ugly as hell.
Yeah. That sucks.
And then when they went to get Jessica out of the hotel room, her, like, little dog collar was hanging.
Oh.
Is that property of Mistress D? Or Miss D or whatever.
Miss D's nuts. Sorry.
It's just so crazy.
That's wild. Just don't get in a BDSM love triangle.
I feel like also... So when Grandma lived at Lake Skinner, there was this like really hot guy.
And he was into BDSM?
No, he was the nature guy.
Oh.
So every week, I think on Thursday nights, he would meet up with the kids in the area and he would take them on like nature hikes. And so one time we went into the bathroom at night and it was like covered with bats on the ceiling.
Okay.
And so we got to see all the bats sleeping. Like we had the lights off and then he turned them on and then they all scattered.
That's a spooky.
Probably super dangerous, but we trusted him.
That's dangerous?
Yeah, they carry rabies.
You carry rabies.
That's true. So we would go, and every night would be like a different theme, and we'd go see like whatever. It was like a lot of snakes and wildlife and birds and stuff like that. We should go stay. We should.
Like, and just so, a throwback.
Yeah. And so I think it's called a pontoon, the boat you could rent to fish off.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure it's called a pontoon. So basically, they would have found Brittany. I think somebody would have found her regardless.
Yeah.
Because like wherever you drive those, like the areas where you could drive your car, people drive in with a trailer to haul their boat.
Yeah.
To take it to the dock. It's like a whole thing.
Okay. So this is, first of all, they were dumb in like multiple instances. One, why would you dump a body at a campsite?
It's like a recreational area that they dumped a body.
Yeah. So that's big dumb. Okay, there's dumb number one. Two, why would you have somebody reach out who doesn't like someone to commit the crime? Okay, I'm not saying go hire a hitman, but why would you have somebody clearly...
That's and like, so many witnesses.
Yes. We're going to have your enemy come pick you up. You'd be like...
And all the neighbors are probably like, what the fuck?
Like, I thought she hates... And they're all friends.
I feel like this whole story might have been also like... There's not a lot of information, but I'm thinking like... I don't know. I feel like this chick, Channy, probably would have been like, nah, don't go.
Or honestly, moral of the last two stories. I feel like
Brittany would have known not to hang around them if she knew.
She clearly was uneasy about it because she gave their number to her. Honestly, moral of the story, listen to your friends.
Yeah.
Fuck your enemies. And just because you're moving, still be cautious. She probably thought, I want to go on this cruise, this dinner. And it sucks that they...
And she's probably like, oh, they're harmless. Because yes. I think you never expect someone to do those things. I feel like you don't expect to be attacked by somebody.
No, you don't.
You always try to see the good in people.
Yeah, I have that problem.
Oh, we do have fun. We've had fun. She just gets jealous, but we have fun all the time. She's just dumb. Maybe she was super fake around her.
Yeah.
But then, because obviously her friend... I forgot her name, Elizabeth, was still bringing her around. So it must have not been, seemed that serious. Maybe they didn't even hate her as much as they tried to say they did. Maybe they just were really desperate to reenact these fantasies that they were having.
No, I can believe people really hated them. Like, people get
really... But I feel like she would feel that.
Yes, but jealousy is...
Right.
Stronger and... Almost, I don't want to say hidden, but portrayed in a longer duration of time. So that's what it could have been.
Pent up.
Yes. Like almost like a crime of lust.
Yeah.
Who knows? What if like he was at home and Brittany came over and then after Brittany left, they went into the BDSM room because her husband obviously.
It's very possible.
That's what
I was thinking. Like.
So that's why she kept coming around. So she was just her friend because who fucking knows what this guy was? Guys are creeps.
In that case, make sure you always lift with your legs and not your back.
Bye. Bye.